the year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pielafon Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And speaking of CI, we have Professor Tracy Bennett with us, a clinical psychologist and an adjunct professor at CSU CI. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And among other things, besides being a mom and a clinical psychologist, you're a screen safety expert. Does that mean I can talk to you about my broken iPhone screen, or is that something more psychological?
That's in the mom department.
Okay.
I know just where you can get that fixed.
So what's a screen safety expert?
Well, 5 years ago, I founded Get Kids Internet Safe in response to how childhood has changed in my practice and both in my home. And since then, I've really been passionate about preventing digital injury rather than just treating it.
And digital injury is the psychological negative impacts of using computers? Is that?
Yeah, there can be emotional injury and also physical injury.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we're here today because a few hours ago I was reading Ross Duhart, who's a conservative columnist in the New York Times, and he was citing two articles that he thought were really very important that he had read last week. He was saying that what was interesting to him about these articles is that the conservatives, of which he is one, felt that in the 70s and 80s, the sexual revolution was going to cause a disruption in families, a lack of going to church, a whole bunch of social issues. But what's happened is, and this is in the New York Times, so I'm not going over the line here, he said, but what happened was that the internet exploded with pornography, and with pornography came excessive masturbation. And so they didn't need to have relationships. And so you have now, apparently, based on these two articles, less rape, less pregnancies, because so many people are relieving themselves in private. Now, he agrees this is not good because he cites August Huxley's Brave New World, which kind of talks about this back years ago, that, you know, you need relationships to have a society. But it's so interesting that some of the quote-unquote negative aspects of excessive computer use has at least, for the short run at least, has some benefit.
Yeah, it's really confusing because we've known for decades that playing aggressive video games or violent video games, for example, is actually causal. It causes aggression and it decreases pro-social behavior and empathy. Mm-hmm. Yet, adolescent delinquency is down. So it's very confusing. It's a conundrum. How is it that screen activities can be so violent and distasteful and yet crime rate is down? Maybe it's distraction.
And, you know, the other thing about it is when we want to have people become part of a society, and we look at our society today, which is, as the social term is, atomized. We have this split probably into 10 groups, but make it just red and blue to be easy, where, you know, this tribalism is, you know, partly exacerbated by people getting this feedback from whatever website they're on, whatever newspaper they read, is consistent with their own worldview.
Radicalization online.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're finding a lot of the mass shooters have been radicalized online and have manifestos before they commit their crime.
So one of the things that the the NRA has been saying is that in order to prevent gun violence in schools, what we need is to it's a mental health problem. But if you look at the other 20 industrial countries, we have the craziest people in the world per capita, or it could be guns. I mean, it seems that we're not the craziest. And why do we have per capita by far the most school shootings?
Yeah, these are complicated questions. I mean, the truth is, I don't think there's one answer, right? It's not about guns. It's not all about mental health. It's not all about education and access. There are so many contributing factors that there's a lot of gray areas, and this kind of discussion is what's important to find the answers.
So what do you do? The mother of the kid that went into that bar in Thousand Oaks 10 days ago had issues that she apparently brought to the police. What do you do as a therapist? You're a clinical therapist. Somebody comes to you and says, "My son is potentially going to get himself into trouble." Is there anything you can do?
Well, you know, I mean, I appreciate that people look to psychologists to uncover answers and to be with people and help them discover and heal. However, you know, we can't predict behavior any better than anybody else. Our prediction ability is quite low. But I will say that with more insight and people referring for treatment, maybe we can help people heal prior to assault. It's a very difficult thing to do. We're not great at treating PTSD. We're making progress. In fact, I teach addiction studies, and my students are sending me articles often about, you know, how they're starting to use hallucinogens, psilocybin, which is mushrooms, and ketamine for the treatment of PTSD. So there is a lot of research happening that shows promise, but currently psychologists aren't great at healing PTSD and violence, or even predicting violence.
Yeah, and there's also a question of whether this guy had PTSD. Apparently, people who knew him said he had no symptoms of that. He's just sort of aggressive. So this is the other problem. I mean, it just may not be, he may have had mental health problems, but it may not have been as a result of service. He was apparently pretty rough around the edges even before he went to the service.
Yeah, you know, and one promising area that overlaps with the screen safety issue is oftentimes people post material that can give you insight that they may be at risk, so that they can get to somebody before something like this happens. This is one positive aspect of social media, that people reveal themselves to their tribe, right, so that there's opportunity for intervention.
So there are two types of injuries for that we are concerned about for people because of abusive computer or cell phone behavior. One is distracted driving, and the other is what it does to you socially. So let's take the simple one. Do people realize how much negative impact it has when you're texting when you're driving?
Oh, my goodness. I was just talking to friends of mine, TeenSafe. They're the largest monitoring program, and they're unveiling distracted driving products right now. And, yeah, I mean, if you look, drive down the freeway, and you'll see a significant percentage of people on their mobile phones. And the reason why is because we have the sense of urgency. As soon as we see a notification, right, our brain immediately gets compulsive, and we have to clear those notifications. And people are prioritizing that over safety on the roads. It's really scary.
Yeah, I mean, they should have a system of where if you're in a car and moving, you don't get the notification. And then there's the other more comprehensive or more maybe not significant, but certainly more pervasive issue is that what it does to not just children, but adults too, where they're living in a world parallel to the real world.
Right. Yeah, that's what I talk about a lot, that it takes expertise not only in parenting your non-virtual child, but also your virtual child. And kids, for the first time in history, kids know more than parents about the virtual world. So parents kind of opt out. Once kids get their first mobile screens, they, you know, load every app and they're on every website, and the parents feel lost and kind of humiliated, so they avoid it, which I understand. I'm a parent. I get it. You know, they talk a different slang. They can rush through that stuff quicker than me, and I'm a fairly early adopter. But just as kids are discovering things online, I think parents need to discover new parenting techniques, because you really need to filter and monitor kids both online and offline. And we're not doing a great job at that. And that's why we're seeing a lot of interpersonal injuries like cyberbullying and kids getting access to sexual predators. privacy violations, you know, marketing and scamming. Those are the emotional injuries that happen on screen.
What's the right age to give your child a phone?
Oh, boy, is this...
22?
Right? You know, it was interesting because a lot of times people vilify screens to the point where they say, you know, Dr. Bennett, if you think it's so scary, why are you not doing screen-free parenting products? And
what does that mean?
In other words, parent without screens at all.
Okay.
You know, isn't it easier just to take screens away and not let them have it until they start college? But I'm realistic. I have kids at home, and I also teach at the university. And I am such a better teacher at Channel Islands now than when I started 12 years ago because I, you know, show them videos and we have discussions and we have news reports. And it's just a really vibrant learning environment. And it's in that aspect, it's good for our brains. Digital literacy is critical for kids to make progress. And if you keep it away from them, they're going to miss out on all that opportunity. However, our brains are going to develop based on what's in front of it. Right. So if we're only seeing two-dimensional learning opportunities, then our brains are going to miss out on the three-dimensional learning that happens with, you know, face-to-face interpersonal contact, especially the little ones. Little ones need a constant narrative from mom or dad about what's going on during the day and how to do it. And it's just too easy to hand them the iPad or the phone so you can get something done.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, we had two neuroscience researchers on that were talking about in the 0 to 2 age group, putting your child in front of that Einstein thing that Disney puts out or any of those other things really is very detrimental to the kid. The kid needs to be able to eyeball with a human being, particularly the mother.
Yeah, you know, one of my interns wrote an article about the baby Einstein. It was a series, actually. And they made enormous amounts of money. And do you know there was no research behind it at all? The outcome study said it did no good whatsoever, even though Disney bought it and continued it. So, yeah, the research is showing that over 3, there are some educational benefits to screen time. But under 3, we're not seeing a lot of good outcome data. In fact, what we're seeing is developmental delay.
Yeah, I won't let my grandchildren use it, but I can. I'm old enough, so it probably won't hurt me, right, to use the baby
Einstein.
You're
probably too far gone.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar, or get a coffee drink or fresh squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market in Delhi, open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a 4-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a 4-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Tracy Bennett, a clinical psychologist and a faculty member at CSUCI. Thank you again, Tracy, for being here. So when I was growing up, television was considered to be the boob tube, and it was going to make us all non-human. Now that we're parents and grandparents, have we projected that onto the new screen, or is it something that we don't understand enough to do that? Is there a similarity between the fears of our parents about rock and roll and television the same as our fears about screen time?
I think absolutely. But the difference between passive viewing television, which is what we did, this is interactive. Right. So you can seek anything on demand at any time that hasn't been regulated, that hasn't been looked at, even by another human sometimes. Sometimes bots create content that kids see that no human had interface with. So, yes, there's a little bit of similarity, but I mean, it's exponentially bigger portal of risk now.
And the thing that is, I think, one of the most dangerous parts of it is bullying, because when I was growing up, we were bullied, but at least the person doing the bullying had to confront the person. Here, not only don't you have to confront them, but you can put that something out that you don't get just two or three people listening. You get, you know, thousands of people listening.
Oh, Neil, I could break your heart telling you the cyberbullying incidents I see in my office very regularly. And it used to be that only vulnerable kids were bullied, but now everybody gets a turn. And kids are compulsively checking their social media to see who's targeted that day, if it's them. And sometimes they're bullied before they've even been aware that people can be unkind. You know, I had a beautiful young 13-year-old who had a major depressive episode because she went on and people were rating her, you know, about how attractive she was or marriable, or I won't even use the profanity that they used. And it just shocked her that the world was that unsafe and she couldn't show her face at school. And that's fairly common. Or kids who fish information out of other kids and then out them online so that everybody shuns them all at once. And then they'll re-release it over and over. So when people were mean to us, right, it lasted, what, a day or two? Everybody kind of forgot about it. People saw the pain on her face and they showed some empathy and that we moved on. But there, they don't have the advantage of seeing their insults hit the person. And it gets blasted out in front of thousands of people. And sometimes they feed on it. You know, more and more kids jump in. And it's a brutal, vulgar place being online.
Restorative justice is now being used in schools to make the perpetrator of bullying aware of the damage that he or she is doing as a way of dealing with it rather than simply punishment. I wonder if restorative justice ideas could be used as a preventive method to avoid online bullying, where you could, you know, go into the classroom or talk to groups of kids to show them, because, you know, kids at 13 aren't exactly rocket scientists. Kids at 19 aren't either, have half a brain. And so the idea would be to sort of teach them, to create an empathetic view of the world where how much damage they're doing.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. And a lot of school districts are doing that. They're adopting digital citizenship curriculums, and I think they're doing an excellent job at that. But you know what I think we all make a mistake at? I think we overestimate what kids are capable of. I think parents think that if we just say, hey, you know, you need to be careful because there's predators out there and there's cyberbullying and you're going to get a, you know, repetitive use injury. If you just tell them once that they're going to learn and it'll prevent a problem. But the truth is, as you said, their prefrontal region isn't developed until they're in their mid-20s. They can't anticipate consequence. And imagine being 13 and having on-demand content at any time. Of course, that pull of that addictive draw, that dopamine hit of that screen is going to overcome a parent warning that was in the background. And besides, they don't think we have much credibility, do they? We're immigrants. We're digital immigrants. They're digital natives. And sometimes they dismiss what we have to say because they really feel like they're experts in the virtual world.
So speaking of educating kids, can you teach empathy? What if a kid is just not empathetic? I don't want to use the word mean. I'm going to be nicer and say not empathetic. Can you teach it?
I think you absolutely can teach it. I do it in my practice every day and I do it with my children. But in order to teach it, you have to have a lot of face-to-face conversation. And you have to also challenge your kids to problem solve on their own. You know, I think another very dangerous thing that we're doing in parenting these days is sometimes we expect our kids to be blindly obedient. And I understand obedience is critical. You know, I demand that my kids be obedient. But the blindly obedient is what I have a problem with. If we teach kids that they have to mind every adult out there, and we don't give them a chance to kind of negotiate or think about what their options are, then they're going to be obedient to people we don't want them to be obedient to. So that means that we need to have engaging conversations with our kids that are actually fun and interesting. We need to listen, introduce new information. So I have my Get Kids Internet Safe website, right? And one of my first objectives of that website was to provide 800 to 1,000 word blog articles for parents so that they could get a weekly article, read it, and then be able to talk about it around an old-fashioned family dinner with all the screens docked in on a basket in the middle, right? And then challenge the kids to come up with their answers and their solutions and let them spin it out. Even if they're wrong, let them spin out lots of options and then start to have those teaching opportunities where you talk about it and it's fun. I do that with my kids, and I have teenagers, and you wouldn't believe how many things I learn trying to teach them.
So your website, is that for adults or is it for kids too?
It's for adults, although I'm working on a child workbook. So I thought that my biggest impact would be to teach parents how to get closer to their kids. That's my first objective. And then the second objective is how to stage their homes and their screens so that it's appropriately filtered, it's appropriately monitored, that there's rules and parameters in place, and give them teaching language so that they can teach kids how to do things with balance. And also, you know, I get a lot of parents who are like, when do they get a phone? When should they get social media? How much time should I allow? What about video games? All those articles give that information. And now I'm super excited because I have an online home starter course that in 10 easy steps parents can follow step by step to get kind of the basics, a digital contract, how to set up their working stations, how to have those conversations.
How do people get that?
They just go on my line or on my website, getkidsinternetsafe.com.
Say it slowly so people can remember it.
Oh, thank you. Getkidsinternetsafe.com. And there's a tab that says courses. Mm-hmm. And if they go to the home starter course, it's excellent. I mean, it has videos, it has downloadable action items. So they can take it all at once. I mean, they could do it in 2 hours if they rushed through, or you can take a step a day. But I'm one of those people that if I'm online learning, I don't like somebody else to control my pace. So I gave them a ton of material, but in really easy, actionable steps that they can use for parents of toddlers to teens. So it grows as your kid grows with you. And then they also have access to me through a private Facebook page. They can email me. And now I'm unrolling online coaching from parent demand. I just can't see everybody in my office anymore.
So is this website free?
This is a free website.
And you're doing it because?
Because I'm an advocate for children and I want the world to be a better place.
Well, that's really great.
Yeah. You know, I'm 50 years old now, Neil. Yeah. You know, and I've treated people for a long time. And this is the time I want to have a legacy and really reach more and more people. I mean, ironically, I'm talking about screen safety and my website requires me to be online a lot. But the good news is I can communicate with more parents. We have these vibrant, really great discussions and people are getting smarter. And their kids are getting smarter. And I love that about Get Kids Internet Safe.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. And we'll be right back.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Could bring your phone and listen to a pod.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Tracy Bennett, a clinical psychologist and an adjunct professor at CSUCI, and we're talking about all things important for kids and adults dealing with screen safety. And one of the things that some people have proposed over the last few years is for parents to get the applications that permit them to look into the phone or the laptop of their kid. Is that a good idea to kind of sneak in, or even if you tell a kid, and look behind?
I'm actually a proponent of monitoring your kids, but I'm a proponent of telling them that you're going to monitor them so you're not sneaking and lying. Because I think it's hypocritical to punish a kid for sneaking and lying while you're sneaking and lying. In fact, last year I was global ambassador of Teen Safe, like I said, and they had a huge monitoring system, the first out and the biggest. And the reason they hired me on is because, or they gave me a grant actually, is because people were using their stuff as spyware. And we were of the belief that kids need to know that their parents can see it, because you know what I tell my kids? I say, you guys, I can see anything on your digital devices at any time. And not only can I, but so are other parents, and so are your teachers, so can law enforcement, and so are other kids. And I think if you tell your kids that you have ownership over their devices and that you're going to look at their stuff on occasion, I mean, don't look at every single thing and violate their privacy all the time, but just do a spot check here and there, they think before they post. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a more realistic and responsible viewpoint of what posting means.
Could that work with our president, do you think?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Don't get me started on that, Neil.
So you've done some work with Facebook.
I have.
And speaking of issues that, you know, that we have to deal with as a society, the pervasiveness of Instagram and tweeting and Facebook. So what kind of involvement do you have with the Facebook application?
Well, Facebook offered or invited me to serve on their youth advisory committee because they were creating a messaging act called Facebook Messenger Kids. So it's not a social media platform, but it's really a fun way for parents to talk to their kids and for friends to talk to friends. And they were seeking child development experts in its development to make it not only a great learning opportunity, but also have the safety features in there that most of us were really angry about, that they have not been implemented for a long time. Now, there was still some controversy, including me. I mean, when Facebook contacted me, I had been somewhat critical on one of my articles about that, because I said, look, I think you're inviting kids to get hooked, right? You're baiting them into the product. But I have to say, with working with them, they have been really open-minded. They've worked very hard to educate parents, and I think they continue to do so. And screens aren't going away. Messaging apps aren't going away. So at least we have some big players starting to be responsible and look for kids' safety.
So speaking of safety and speaking of, you know, sensible screen guidelines, can you give us any tips?
You bet. I'll give you some quick tips that are good takeaways, especially if there's parents out there. And maybe some of us can learn from it too. Number one, that instead of yanking screens away, use moderation. One of my favorite things I did with my kids was, we called it No Tech Tuesday. They were days where they didn't have screen time at all. No TV, no mobile phones, no iPods, nothing. And those were the days they climbed trees, dug in the barranca, got in fights, made a mess out of the house. Old school play. And now that they're teenagers, I see them go out and play with the dogs and the goats and all the things that we did to enrich their lives outside of the screens, partly because of what they learned when they were little. Now that they're older, I don't do no tech days, but I do blackout times, like no screens in the morning to get us out, etc. Another is monitoring and filtering apps and software, which we talked about. And there's so many free parental controls out there. They're easy to use. Dock the kids' screens at night. I just talked to one of my best friends and I was so mad at him because he found out that his daughter had her laptop in her room. And he said, well, I do the docker screens at night, but it didn't occur to me that her laptop was the screen. And I was like, do you not listen to everything I teach? Screens are laptops, iPads. Don't let your kid use their phone as their alarm clock or music at night or white noise. Dock it in your room because they will sneak it 30 minutes before bedtime. Then they're not up at 2 a.m. texting their friends and watching Netflix. Because I'll tell you, I listen to my kids' screens beep all night. On school nights, kids are up till 2 or 3, and that's a real problem. Follow game ratings. People have looked at them. They're there for a great reason. And finally, no social media till middle school. Now, I know people think that's insane, but I'll tell you, social media is an attention draw. And kids, until they've established real expertise with lots of teachers and lots of other kids, they're going to have a hard time staying out of trouble with that. There are some situations like in divorced families, you know, where parents want to get a hold of them. But you can get unsmartphones, you know, phones that aren't connected to the internet. So there's some quick takeaways that might be helpful.
One of the things that kids have always had as a problem has been anxiety. And if just looking at it without really thinking about it, you could see a kid on his phone or her phone partly because of generalized anxiety is making that kid do that. And then the kid looks calm doing that. But is that really is that just eating the sugar and for the moment and not really dealing with anxiety?
Oh, I love that you asked this question because as a clinician, I have a very specific perspective on this. Number one, I've been practicing for 26 years. And for the first time ever, I'm seeing 7-year-olds with panic disorder. That is significant. In my mind, I think one of the biggest contributors is that kids are on their screens. They're in battle. They're super excited. That autonomic overarousal is like a fight or flight. And if they're in that high stress situation, even if it's fun for hours a day, it starts to create fatigue and burnout. And then you see kids having meltdowns, which are different than regular tantrums, and having severe anxiety symptoms. And that doesn't even mention the social media compulsive checking of notifications, so they're not cyberbullied that day.
You know, maybe 8 things I look at on my laptop or my Facebook, and they're all news sites except for Facebook. And when I go to Facebook, it's when I don't want to think, when I want to just kind of relax because the news is too stimulating. So I could see how I'm not a kid, but I could see how kids would go to social media because they think it's calming. But it isn't really, because it's really about them.
Well, it's kind of a cheap fix. You know, I teach addiction studies to my Cal State Channel Islands students. And what I always teach them is that when people are using drugs of addiction, sometimes it's not their first use. But in the beginning, there's a euphoria or a high usually that is associated with that drug of addiction. But then after a while, that high goes away. And people use it just to stave off unpleasant withdrawal symptoms. And I think that happens with our screens. At first, we get really high about it. It's super exciting. Remember our first texts, how excited we were about it, and our first emails, how excited we were about it. And then it became about work, and now we don't like it that much. You kind of habituate to it, and then you're just on it so that you don't feel anxious. You know, we're in Southern California, and we've recently had some fires and the tragedy in Thousand Oaks. And I found myself compulsively on my Facebook just trying to discover new information. And it was a purely anxiety-driven behavior. I just felt like I was going to miss out on something I really wanted to know about. And I was really driving myself to the point of fatigue. I wasn't accomplishing what I really set out to do. I was wearing myself out.
What do you think of the opioid crisis? Is that just a simple further manifestation of the old crack epidemic or the heroin of 30 years ago, or is that something new?
Well, we're seeing epidemic numbers like we've never seen before. But, you know, America and Europe was we had an opioid epidemic in the 1800s. So it's a very powerful drug. But the big pharma was behind it. I went to some of those drug dinners because I was married to a psychiatrist where they were quoting that only 1% of people on narcotics for pain would become addicts. That was not a study. It got shared and shared and shared, but it was actually like from an opinion piece on a peer-reviewed journal article. So it was shared as if it were fact, and doctors were given incorrect information, and prescriptions went off the roof, and now heroin's just too readily available.
Yeah, I'm very liberal, but the one of my issues is if somebody takes an opioid and then chops it up so it has is fast acting and takes it because it's a way of getting high, and then they sue the drug company. There's got to be some responsibility for people, not just the drug company. The drug companies have some responsibility in terms of how they marketed it, but there are people just abusing it and blaming, you know, it's like cigarettes now. People who started smoking 5 years ago can't really blame the cigarette companies.
I'm with you on that. I mean, there's a chemical hook. They're responsible for that. But you know what else we do? We go on drugs and screens and anything addictive to escape an overtasked world. I think that on our screens, we have escalated to the point where we're overwhelmed. There's this sense of urgency that we're in so much of the day. We're doing the job of three people. We bring our work home. No longer are we off at 5 o'clock. We're checking our emails at 9 o'clock at night. And that constant urgency and that drive is wearing us out. And we want to escape it. And I think that's why we're seeing some high addictive rates in lots of drugs and alcohol, because people just want to escape that constant sense of urgency.
My son, who works in the news business, sleeps with two iPhones. He sleeps with it because
right.
He can't miss anything.
Well, and you've heard of the vibration, that people have this phantom vibration where they think it's buzzing, but it's not. Yeah, I think some tech vacations are really good. I actually travel with somebody from Silicon Valley. He's a security expert, and he makes me get off my phone. He's like, you know, he's just one of these people. He's in the tech industry, and he's not married to his phone at all. And he has taught me to detox. And I'll tell you, those moments of stillness are delicious, and we just don't have them enough, and we don't teach our kids. That's when our good thinking happens and our good connecting happens. Like if families just committed to carving out moments of stillness for each of us, we would be so much happier and so much kinder to each other.
So how come my anxiety level is such that I'll look at my phone 15 times during the day for emails and I don't get any? And then I'm disappointed.
You know what I think? So I was at a branding conference where they were saying, you know, why are you in love with your business and how do you get more in love and reach more people? And she made us do this exercise, and I was all frustrated because I was like, I don't see what this has to do with my business. And she said, you know, write about the last time you had a moment of bliss. And the last time I had was on safari looking for animals, you know, seas of golden grass. It was blowing in the wind and we were all really quiet and we couldn't wait till we saw something. And we didn't know if it'd be gruesome or cute or boring or exciting or what it was. And, you know, I made the connection to my business because I think that's what we're all doing on screens. Kids, it's a portal for discovery. Kids are trying to discover new information, connect to new people. We're trying to discover. And so it kind of taps into our primitive impulse of learning, right?
So you must be, I could see how you'd be very good with kids with this subject, because you do love the phone, even though you're telling them to beware. It's not like someone who's saying this is an awful thing, like rock and roll will make you dumb.
Right.
But this is something that you just need to do in moderation. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton, and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa, and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Tracy Bennett, a clinical psychologist, professor at CSUCI, and a screen safety expert. And we're talking, among other things, about the negative effects of too much screen time. And, the thing we talk about AHA here, when a AHA group meets, the first thing they do is they pass around a bucket and everyone has to put their phone in. Not turn it off. They do have to turn it off, but they have to put it in the bucket.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's good for them.
Yes.
Yeah, good for
everybody.
Yeah. I've been there a few times, and the little kid is holding the bucket for me, and I was trying to explain that I'm an adult, and it didn't help. I still had to put my phone in the bucket.
You know what? My millennials are better at giving up their phones than the adults.
Yeah, I mean,
because they've kind of been trained to use manners. So I went on a vacation with my 24-year-old, and she was 22 at the time. And every time I get a notification, I feel like I have to, get it out of my inbox and take care of it. So I kept interrupting our vacation to check my phone whenever I got a text or whatever. And at one point, very kindly, she said, "You know, Mom, you're making me crazy because you're ruining our vacation by checking your phone." So I was like, "No, I'm not." She's like, yeah, you are. And I said, "Well, what are you doing?" And she said, "I'm batching. I'm waiting until we have a minute. And then I go through all of them at once." Mm. Like, you got to learn how to batch things. And I was like, oh, my gosh, she's right. So I practiced it. And then I went home and I looked it up. And sure enough, Microsoft had done a study. And they found that people in the workplace, if they would require that they schedule an hour where they check their email and they're not allowed to check it any other time of the day, that they were far effective as workers and much happier. Morale went up. So millennials have a lot to teach us. It's not just us teaching them.
So why, if with all of this connectivity, do people feel so lonely?
You know, I think it's what I was talking about, like that first high, you never get it again. I mean, isn't one of my favorite things is being with my best friends face to face, laughing and making faces and seeing my humor hit and them seeing their humor hit, and how fun being together is. I mean, one of our biggest primal urges is connection. Well, on the internet, you're connecting to lots of different people, but at a superficial level. So you get a little bit of a hit, but not enough. So you're constantly seeking more and more and more, and it makes you lonely.
Yeah, but when you go to dinner, you look around the restaurant, and there'll be four people, and three of them are on there, unless they're talking to each other via the messaging.
Right.
They're all not talking to each other.
Yeah,
they're,
it's a cheap fix. It's easier to do, but it's not as satisfying.
Okay, but that's sort of something that, if I were the therapist of one of these kids or adults doing it, I'd say, why are you out to dinner?
Right.
And looking at who's going to text you, that's more interesting.
Well, and parents need to get brave and say, put your phone away.
Yeah.
You know, it's shocking how many parents come up and say, I can't get their phone from them. And I'm like, wait, what? What do you mean you can't get it? And one of the things I tell parents in my practice is buy the device and all everything on it yourself. Don't let them buy it because they need to know you have ownership and what you say goes. And don't take no for an answer. You're the parent. You know what's best for them. You know, kids would eat chocolate chip cookies 3 days or, you know, 3 meals a day if we let them. It doesn't mean chocolate chip cookies are terrible, but it also means they don't know what's good for them. But we do. So you have to require that they have balance between connecting with their friends online, which is great, but also connecting with their family and friends offline.
So is there anything that a parent can look at? All of the things we discussed are not great in terms of things that could happen to your child, but it's sort of part of growing up. Are there any things that indicate there's a real problem? I mean, are there signs that you really have to, you know, put the brakes on?
You mean a sign that a parent could look at for like red flags?
Right, red flag that says, wait a minute, this is not the typical kid too much, you know, watching videos. This is something's wrong here.
Yes. Well, one is huge temper outbursts, especially when they have to get off their screen. That means autonomic overarousal and they're going through withdrawal and they're fighting tooth and nail. So if they're having huge explosions or a lot of pushback, they're probably on their screens too much. Another is if it looks like they're compulsively checking and they panic if they don't have their phone around them, that's also a sign that there's a real problem.
So the fact that I keep grabbing my phone, I'm in a panic right now?
Yeah, you keep stroking it and holding it up to your cheek. They can't see that you're doing that, but I think I'm going to take it away from you.
I'm still waiting for my first email of the day. Tell us about you. How did you get involved in therapy? Were you a patient like I was, or were you just interested in it for its academic reasons?
Well, I was a patient, but I was also a child of a psychologist. I actually went to UCSB, and I was in pre-med. And when I see an injury, I get this like visceral nausea, and I hated it. I was thinking, I'm not sure that I have the love for it to get all the way through. And so I went undeclared because I didn't want to be a psychologist like my dad or just because my dad did it. But psychology really found me. I loved the classes. I loved everything about it. And I'm telling you, I love my job. In all these years, 26 years of doing therapy, I love going to work every day. Watching people make transformation is an amazing thing.
And that's why I love being a patient. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we've been talking to Dr. Tracy Bennett, a clinical psychologist and a professor at CSUCI Channel Islands. And let's just talk briefly about being not just a therapist, but a teacher. I remember when my wife went to school, and she was older than most, the average age of the kid graduating were 23. So how could a 23-year-old have patience? I mean, isn't it life experience, too? How do you teach someone to be a good therapist? In a minute.
Oh, God. That's the hardest question you've asked me so far. Graduate school teaches you a lot. Your supervisors teach you a lot. Life experience teaches you a lot. And your clients teach you. So really, it's the connection. Of all the research that says what's the number one factor for therapeutic outcome, for positive therapy, it's the connection that you have with your client. And if you don't like your client, I don't think you're really a good therapist. And I love watching my clients make positive change. And I was saying earlier that I raise a lot of the kids in my community because they come when they're 3 and kicked out of preschool. They come back at 11. They come back at 15. And watching that progression is really a special thing.
Isn't it funny? You know, I used to live, if you haven't guessed now, you're not listening. I used to be from New York. And, you know, in New York, you never saw anybody that you knew. But here, you see everybody. And so it's interesting to be a therapist in a very small town.
Yeah, I run into my clients all the time. And my kids, they don't know who I've seen, but my clients know my kids. And so it's kind of a weird dynamic. But I see, you know, everybody just like you and me. So it's a cool community.
And kids are different today. They're not going to hide the fact that they're in therapy.
There's no stigma or shame. They're like, I'm going to therapy. See ya. Which is great.
Yeah. So you have a zillion things that you're doing. So tell us what we can do to learn more about you. You have a Get Kids Internet Safe. You have a book.
I do. I have a book I'm super proud of. I published it in last December, and I'm updating it this January with a new book cover and some new content because tech changes so quickly. It's called Screen Time in the Meantime, a parenting guide to get kids and teens internet safe. And that book has everything in it. It has child development, what the research says, and also action items that parents can do for safety. And then I also have the online course.
Well, how do you get the book?
Go to getkidsinternetsafe.com. Or Amazon. So if you look it up, Screen Time in the Meantime, Dr. Tracy Bennett, the book will pull up very quickly. I also have a workbook for the Home Starter course. You can either buy the workbook or you can do the online course. The online course has a little more than the book, but both are easily available and convenient. And I also have a drtracybennett.com because I do a lot of presentations, local churches and schools. I'm very reasonably priced just because I love to reach as many parents as possible. I've done over 40 presentations now. It's really fun. I have videos. I go on Access Hollywood sometimes as their parenting expert, which is really fun. I love doing television. So this has added a lot of knowledge and vibrancy to my career, and I get to reach more parents, and I love it. So drtracybennett.com or getkidsinternetsafe.com will let you know what I'm up to. I'm also starting workshops for moms and for mental health professionals for training and supervision. I had 10 workshoppers with me a couple months ago, and we had a ball. In 5 sessions, they learned a lot about how to get their kids internet safe, and even better than that, how to have fun parenting.
Why only moms? Why not dads?
Dads are welcome too. It just so happened that only moms took me up, probably because it was a moms groups on Facebook. But I do write for parents. That's why I purposely say parents, because I have a lot of dad subscribers who write in.
Yeah. And if she went too fast, she has a very robust website. All you have to do is Google Tracy Bennett, Dr. Tracy Bennett, and everything will come up. When you go to work in the morning, you like it, and I can tell by listening to you. And it's sometimes frustrating to deal with the problems that we have today in the world. But I guess one of the things that you can do as a therapist is to show a nice smiley face to help people, you know, face the day.
It's all about hope and discovery and play.
Well, thank you so much for all of you do for our kids, all you do for the students at CSUCI, and thank everyone for listening to Money Talk. To About Education, and we'll be back next week.